Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me by the glistening flame is Paul Sporer. Hi, Paul.
Hi, I thought I was going to be glistening for a moment.
Well, I mean, you do glisten always. You have a glow, and now there is a flame to match you. And it's certainly not me. Good to see you, Paul. How's everything this past week?
It's good to see you as well. You know, we've been off for a week. We had a catch-up week last week, so I missed getting time by the fire, talking some pitching and hanging out. But I'm doing well. You know, I think I say this literally every pod, and I'm sorry, but I truly can't believe end of June. Like, I marvel at the time every week that we get together, because how come the crappy part of the year never goes by this quickly, right? Like, the non-baseball part of the year, I never look up and I say, oh my goodness, it's already February. I'm like, oh, we slogged all the way to February. But during the season, it's like zip, 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 zip. And here we are, all-star break, a stone's throw away, Nick.
Absolutely. I know, it is actually really wild. The routine sets in. You know, when your time flies when you're having fun. And it's also, it feels like such a slog in the preseason because we talk about the same exact thing.
That's
over
a good
and
point
over.
Too. Yep.
There's nothing new. There's nothing exciting. It's just the same. And it's exciting that every week we come by and we got nothing, something new going on. And this week we're going to have, what do we call it? The quiz show.
That's right.
Where it's, I have my rankings out. It's been about 3 weeks, I think, since we've done one of these. So it seems fitting to say, look, Sporer, get a chance, look at these ranks and go, that ain't right. And I'm sure I'm going to think, you know what? Yeah, maybe I should make those adjustments next week. It's a good time to really reflect on it. And I actually, before we even get into that, I was talking to everyone yesterday about this. It does feel we're kind of at that point of establishment with a lot of guys. I mean, sure, there are some that are trending in different directions, but I think I have more faith in rebounding or, hey, this is this thing fading that we expected. And it doesn't really feel like our assessments are wildly different. And what I mean by that also is where I start my whole, hey, 12-teamer cutoff, this is just a one-week thing and you move and burn and churn. That starts at 72 this week. It's really aggressive, but I think there's a massive, massive bridge around 60 to 70 or so that is clearly degrading away. Like the 50s versus the 70s are so much different than the 30s and 50s in my view.
I think that's right.
It might be a fact of injuries happening and there's just so much, the actual depth of the starting pitching landscape is slowly dwindling. It could also be that there are just so many guys that have that, yeah, you're fine for a week mentality, that there really isn't much of a difference between all the bottom guys and all the top ones, about 25% strikeout rate and such, or just 50, top 50 or so. I don't know. We're going to explore all of that today. And has there been something that you've been putting out or working on that you've really been thinking a lot about the last 2 weeks?
Well, just been working on the SP chart, you know, day to day doing the podcast, but working on my next rankings. I didn't end up getting anything out for June specific because, again, the month zipped by, but I'll basically end up doing an early July one. So we'll follow this up with next week, kind of matching our rankings. In fact, basically we'll flip the script where you look over mine, compare to your rankings and say, where are you at on these guys over here? And do we have to have some debates on some guys that maybe we change our minds on? Because, you know, we're both open to a deep dive from the other person, maybe enlightening us a little bit on a guy that maybe we didn't have as much knowledge on. Because one of the things I point out, and I always marvel at how you do the list every week and your pitcher roundups allow you to keep track of everybody nicely. But even with that, with the depth of knowledge you have, which is unmatched in the industry, it's still hard to deep dive 100 guys every week.
100%.
There's still some within there. Yeah,
I always miss. 100%.
You're going off of your last roundup where you've got kind of a passing idea of them. So I love getting into these deep dives here and discussing them. But I'm really excited to kind of see how the summer landscape turns, because like you said, man, it gets so dodgy after a certain point there, where we were even talking it just kind of in passing about the Oakland rotation, about how it's like three of the same guy. Like, you might have a ranking, but how discernible are they in talent difference from Estes to Harris to Spence, you know? And then you start getting bigger clusters of that. I termed it the glob years ago, where it's like these 40 pitcher groups
yeah.
where one V40 just isn't that different. And how do you navigate right. that landscape too? That yeah. becomes difficult as well. So anyway, I'll have my rankings out next week updated. We'll grill them. But this week, you're in the hot seat.
I'm in the hot seat. Let's go. Let's do
so
it.
So let's get started.
Okay, so we have the top 100. It was Raylo week. I mean, I think you would yep. agree with it being Raylo week. Yes.
Of course. I love Raylo, and we'll have more on him in a deep dive later on, where yes. perhaps we'll get into some of what's been going on. I think I mentioned this to you on an episode about how he's been slated for about 52 two-start weeks.
Oh, yeah,
I still
right.
think
yeah,
he doesn't is. Have one. He's got one this week. Will it come through? I don't know. He yeah. starts tonight, Tuesday, at St. Louis, and then supposed to get Paul Skenes on Sunday for a big
matchup
there.
We should have
there.
A backup, by the way, for that, just so we are clear.
Just in case, because, yeah, yeah. because he yeah, we'll always talk about that gets later. Moved.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point.
I will say,
yeah,
that adds to his greatness. The uncertainty of Reynaldo Lopez consistently pitching on 6 days rest, seven sometimes. I think that's a skill to be able to handle that. Some guys, you know, they talk about how routine players are and how some, when you break their routine, they fall apart. I think there is some skill in being able to adapt to that and going 6-1 time, 4 another time, 4 days rest another time for Reynaldo Lopez, 5 on this one, 6 here, 7 here. And he's been very flexible. I think he's been the Braves MVP thus far. Am I out of pocket saying that?
Well, Chris Sale, I got to say,
is
has
up
been...
There.
Absurd this year.
Absolutely.
And I mean, he's looking like the old Chris Sale. I mean, he was sitting 97. We don't see that from Chris Sale. We're happy he hits 95. And to see that from Chris Sale with amazing pitch separation, the changeup is back. This is the best version I've seen of Chris Sale since what, 2018?
And you've got Sale at 5, and I don't disagree with that. I love having him up there. I think he's very much in contention for their MVP, because even though they had some expectation for him, I don't know that they thought Sale was going to get back to Cy Young caliber pitcher.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But Raylo's joining him right there. 13 starts of his own at 157 ERA, 108 whip. You've got him at 25. Is this a season high for Reynaldo Lopez?
It is. It is right now. I think we've all really expected Raylo to not be this good. The four-seamer has performed really well.
I'm kidding. I never expected him to be this good. I'm totally teasing.
It was one of those cases where we thought, hey, look, the four-seamer should be good, not necessarily 70% usage with about 36% ICR, which is just everything you want of, 70% strike rate and massive usage. Just saying, look, you just constantly throw his fastballs and he's not getting burned by these, and it's amazing. And then also having two secondary pitches. One that he doesn't get strikes with, the slider, it's 56%. You want to see closer like a 63, 65. However, 22% swing strike rate. So he gets whiffs on those. And then the curveball actually is above that 60% strike rate. So the consistency of those secondaries to actually be supporting the four-seamer is a little bit of a shock, especially when you didn't have the curveball last year at all. It was just four-seamer slider. And keeping up those whiffs at a 22% swing strike rate on the slider is huge. For Reynaldo Lopez, obviously he's had a lot of fortunate luck. The hotel, that is the Holy Trinity equating luck,
right.
says, hey, look, Babbitt, he's like one plus one hit luck or one minus one hit luck for us, and it's 280 Babbitt. That pretty much says, like, yeah, hits wise, he's fine. It's just a really low home run rate and also a high left on base rate, 87%. So
absolutely. Obviously, and he contributes to some of that. But Reynaldo Lopez will have some regression there too. Like
we all understand that, but it's not 30% K rate. It's more like a 25%. He's more like a mid threes and a solid whip. And it's like, wait, that's still really good for a winning ball club. He has 5 wins, I believe. So that's for maybe 6. It should have been more. I remember actually writing that he was a wins guy at the end of May or so. And someone said, hey, he only has 2 wins. I'm like, what?
Well,
it's ridiculous,
but that shows the vagaries of wins, because he was 2-1 in April and then went 3 no decisions to open May. Did Reynaldo Lopez? Do you want to foster a guess of how many earned runs he gave up in those 3 starts, Nick?
2, 3,
4 total, 3 earned, 0 decisions.
Yeah.
So that said, I do still think you classify as Reynaldo Lopez as a wins guy, because we're trying to make the best situations of where you can get wins. They don't always come through, but then boom, he's won 3 of his last 4 and all of a sudden he's 5-2, and it does make sense for Reynaldo Lopez. So I like where you have both those Braves. I do want to talk about another big dog before we start to get a bit deeper, because we saw the return of Gerrit Cole. He looks sharp. He jumps up 8 spots back to the top 5 at 4. Is there a path for him back to number 1? Does living in the top 5 just fine? Where are you at on Cole after one start?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely a path to number one. For me, I was pretty much just waiting for confirmation that Cole was fine and looking like himself. And he was. It was, yes, 60 pitches. I honestly feel that, you know, it's a case where Gerrit Cole, you just need to be good. He was. He should be up to 70, 75. And it's considering that these are, for the most part, in the top 30 rest of season rankings, top 40. And then it shifts into, hey, not necessarily there's going to be an ebb and flow of like risk reward.
Yeah. The higher up, the more certain you are for that to hold.
Well, you're not going to drop these guys. Anyone that you feel like you're not going to drop throughout the entire year, that's rest of season then, right?
I totally agree.
So Cole, if I'm drafting today, yeah. Cole is a top five guy because sure, maybe one start is not necessarily fully there, but like, okay, I'll take that.
Yep.
I am a little worried that he isn't necessarily going to be the same 35% strikeout guy that he has been in the past. And we saw some step back from that last year. The cutter helped him, but then he didn't really throw that. Actually, he threw some really nice cutters, by the way, to the Orioles, and they're so beautiful. But right, we still haven't seen enough quite yet to say like, yes, he's unbelievably 100% back. So fine. But I see him in Glasnow and Wheeler as really like the real three at the top at the moment. Maybe Scooble, but I think he's going to be at least number four next week.
Yeah, I've got Cole up there pretty high as well. I've actually got him at four. And then Sale.
Oh, cool.
Glasnow, Wheeler, Scooble, Cole, Sale.
Oh man, so Glasnow, Wheeler, Cole, Scooble, Sale. Yeah,
Scooble, I mean, Cole, Sale five. For me.
Yeah,
we so both have the same top five. Small five differences.
Yeah,
and we'll get into more. You know what's that?
Who cares? It's the same.
Yeah. Especially at that height, we're talking about aces. You never cut. You love them. You go after them in any way that you can. All right. So let's jump down a little bit. You do have Skeens at 10, which I love. He's amazing. We don't need to talk about him right now. I do want to jump into the second tier here a little bit, because you got some guys right now that bankable, known commodities like an Aaron Nola that even when he's wobbly, you don't worry. It's never really actionable.
Can I say really quickly?
Yeah.
Yesterday, did you notice the strike zone plot of yesterday's game for Aaron Nola?
I didn't. I only watched the condensed game because I went to the movies.
Oh, man.
But I know smoked.
What'd you see?
I saw a movie. It's an old movie called The Vampire's Kiss.
Uh-huh.
It's like,
was it good?
Peak insane Nicolas Cage. Like, I'm serious. Like, the most. Awesome. Here's what I will say. He was on his Tommy Wiseau beat. His acting would have been fit for the room in that movie. It was very bizarre, but it was funny. It was hilarious. Probably in a lot of spots where it wasn't meant to be, but we were cracking up.
That's the meme you don't say of him, crazy eyes.
Correct. Yeah. And then when he does a little arm up, there's so many memes that I did not realize were all from that movie from Nicolas Cage, because there's like four or five different ones that'll pop up in different GIFs. But anyway, interesting movie. Glad we went and checked it. Nola last night.
Aaron Nola. So go to the Pitchers player page. I highly recommend it. Go to the click on that row. And if you guys didn't notice, we updated our game logs this season. Much better now. A, they're faster. So you can really separate by pitch
so
type.
So quick. And
splits, like instantly now. But if you click on any row, you get these advanced pitch details, and the one for, and it has stuff and strike rates and ICR and everything you'd want.
Yep.
And we also changed how our plots look. It's just a little bit nicer with better colors and bigger circles and stuff. And you see all the blue. It's right down where it's supposed to be. It's
just
kind
all
of
in that lower third.
There's no misses. There are no ridiculousness. It's a 55% CSW curveball across 31 thrown.
And you see the one random curveball that's in the top third of the zone was a frozen curveball that froze McKinstry
for real estate, as somebody would say. Two of those. One of those in the fourth inning, also to Colt Keith in there. I mean, it was just nuts. So, like, look, you say what you want about Aaron Nola. That's still a thing. And
end of the day, you just
have that air run game. Sure, whatever.
But you eat it. And you move on, right? Like, and I know he's got a couple 4+ ERA seasons under his ledger the last couple of years, two of the last 3 years, in fact, 21 and 23. I get it. At the same time, at no point during either of those two seasons did I consider sitting him. He's too good, and you still got a 113 and a 115 WHIP respectively. You know, with enough strikeouts, 223 and 202. Don't get hung up on the ERA. Yeah, it was a tough ERA season, but Nola is as bankable as it gets. So I love that you have him ranked up there. And I wanted to juxtapose Nola and Gray, like bankable commodities here at 13 and 14 against two of the show out guys of the early part of the season here. One who had a big regression start recently, Shota Imanaga, and then Tanner Houck at 17. So they're 16-17 to Nola and Gray's 13-14. I'm curious, as we hit this kind of like fork in the road of like, okay, now we're believing in some of these early starts here. Where's your confidence level with guys like Imanaga and Houck specifically against Nola and Gray? Is it a situation where you'd ever consider like a trade where you're moving one of those stable guys for one of the newer guys, Imanaga or Houck, and trying to get something? Like, where do you come out based on the track record versus no track record for guys like that?
Yeah, that's
the high
a good
end?
Question. I don't think if you can do something like that, I would absolutely encourage it. The thing about tier two is that all of them have some sort of flaw. And we've seen from Sonny Gray that, yes, he's very spin focused. He's very much of like slider needs to be there, kind of needs to be there. Really a sweeper, I should say, instead of the slider and then the curve. And sometimes he just aren't. And he can't find the zone properly. And he has these bad outings and they're shorter and they're inefficient and so on and so forth. Right now, he's a 32% K rate. He's cruising. That I don't think is going to last the entire year, but we're obviously going to keep raising him up the list as long as that continues. And that's really the same thing with Ranger Suarez at 15. Like, I do not ever think I'd be doing that. And at some point, you just got to say, well, he's doing it. And that's that. So with Imanaga, I think there's a lot of fear right now about the home run rates, about all of a sudden now it's getting hot and all of a sudden the home runs are going to be smacked out of the park and so on and so forth. And it's very possible that it is. It could be 2023 Joe Ryan in that second half, right? Yep. Of being that's a fastball great. Guy with a splitter off speed, and the fastballs now all of a sudden are getting hit more because people are used to it. Shota Imanaga also is having a little bit less less elite four seamer shape. And it was at 90 and change, not 92, 93, as we saw previously. So there are cracks here. And as long as Imanaga responds in the way that he should, I'd feel more comfortable with it. I mean, honestly, I feel a little bit better, obviously, banking, as you said, with Aaron Nola, Sonny Gray. You feel like, okay, this is what this is going to be. Tanner Houck is believable with the splitter addition. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just not going away. And it sees that for almost 3 months now of just, hey, look, I have my splitter under control. That's such a huge deal for Tanner Houck. So I think all these you should really feel like are bankable. If you are getting a sizable upgrade in some way by getting Imanaga or Houck instead of Nola and Gray, I would do that.
Yeah, I think there's a world where it's at least possible. Of course, teams have to line up and everything, but some people like to pack on those bankable guys with the track record. They might be looking to move an Imanaga or Houck and give you a little hitter upgrade to go with it, or maybe a reliever thrown in or something. I don't think you're going to get the world, but if you can get a clear second upgrade, Nick only has these guys two pitchers apart. So it's like you're getting the same pitcher plus a little extra seasoning there. So, Absolutely. Okay, I want to move on to tier three a little bit, because it's four guys who at any moment can look like darn near aces. Flaherty, Steele, Pablo Lopez, Freddy Peralta. Yep. They've had their ups and downs this year, all of them. I think Flaherty started off, actually he's been great. He had a little spring blip.
It was the beginning of the season. There was an ERA that was a little bit higher than we expected.
Okay, maybe that's what I was remembering then.
He did settle down, and then all of a sudden it just, the four-seamer wasn't hit all of a sudden. He had that one game skills, with his mom in the crowd.
And it's been nutty since then. The 14 Ks in the revenge game against St. Louis. Yeah, he did have a 491 going into that start. So a little bumpy there. Might have even been getting cut in some shallow leagues. Hopefully he didn't do that. He's got a 183 ERA in 54 innings since then. I want to key in on Flaherty first. I do want to talk about a couple others in this group. Because if the Tigers fall out, there's a chance he gets traded. Now, I'm curious. I don't know if this is an answerable question, but I'm just curious how you approach it. We saw him get traded to a contender last year and completely fall on his face with the Orioles. Do you think that is just small sample, 35 innings, who cares? Or is there something to being interrupted into a season and having your life flipped and moving across the country and being part of a different team that maybe he doesn't respond well to? Do you put any stock into that Baltimore trade for Flaherty into how it might affect a trade from Detroit if they fall out of the race?
Well, I think there's a lot of interesting thoughts to have about Jack Flaherty here. We're going to talk about all about Flaherty after this break. So Jack Flaherty, right, you're talking about getting displaced midseason. I do want to mention that Jack Flaherty, before the trade, 4.43 ERA, 155 whip, 22% K rate, 11% walk rate last year. So how we perform,
not nearly as good as this year is what you're
nothing close to it. And also trying to attribute the change of scenery as like, well, why it didn't work out. I think it's more that just Jack Flaherty wasn't good.
Okay. So you're saying it wasn't really a fall off so much as it was.
It was just that they were taking a chance on Flaherty. It did look good in the first outing.
I remember that one. I do.
It was a lot of fun, and he was pumping Ched against, I believe, the Jays. 8 strikeouts and 6 innings, 1 run in that one, and then 8 strikeouts again, and then it all fell off.
And then it fell apart. Yep.
Yeah.
It was 2 good starts there. I'm like, oh, this is going to work, because I love Flaherty. So I was rooting for the O's to get a nice veteran piece there, and then it just fell.
And really the main thing from that start that has impacted this year, which is the same exact approach, are those secondaries, the slider and the curveball just being absurdly good down. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that I've been so impressed by from Jack Flaherty all year. His slider and curveball are so unbelievably consistent at the very, very bottom of the zone. And if you look at actually last year versus this year, the zone rate has gone down over 10 points on Flaherty's slider, but the strike rate has gone up 0.6. So that is 64% to about 65%. On the slider strike rate, despite an 11-point drop in zone rate. That is incredible. Wow. That essentially says you get 8 points of extra O swing. You're just getting better strikes than you did. And what do you know, 47% ICR to 33% on that slider for Flaherty. That's a pitch he throws almost 30% of the time. And that's everything. That's a 20% swing strike rate pitch. That was 13% last year. That's the rhythm he's in. And then you have a curveball as well that has a 65% strike rate with an increase in O swing and a decrease in zone rate. And a decrease in ICR to 37%. Those are the two pitches that are just dominating for Jack Flaherty. He had one hiccup where he had the back problem. And he didn't start for 11 days or so. And it wasn't as pristine of location in that first game as he returned from that back injury. I mean, yes, it was 6 strikeouts against the Astros, but not nearly the same precision of the breakers. And then he went against the White Sox, and you see the line, of course, 5.2 innings, 100 run, 8 Ks, but Flaherty's secondaries were low. It was great. It was wonderful. And I'm such a believer in what he's doing right now. Maybe it gets disrupted and he doesn't have that feel again, and that's how you'll be able to tell. And meanwhile, of course, the four-seamer's not getting hit as hard. I mean, that's also a big thing too.
Exactly.
Increases velocity a little bit. It's not allowing as many mistakes as it was earlier in the season. Just a 6% mistake rate on that pitch, which is double the chance of allowing a hit in the zone for Flaherty's four-seamer, which is a huge improvement for him. So all three of those things combined makes it look like that this is here to stay for Jack Flaherty. It's kind of funny. I never use this. I hate the stat, XFIP. I hate it.
Can you explain why a little bit?
Because it assumes that home run rate should be league average, and it's not.
Yeah.
But he does have the 100th percentile XFIP in the majors.
Wow. That's Jack Flaherty with the 100th percentile XFIP. Now, what's his home run rate? Look, it's actually been pretty good.
It's only 1.08. Well, he's generally more of a ground ball guy. And with a 19% homer fly ball rate, which is 10th percentile. So that's why it's that. And of course, being a K minus walk guy, darling, that is a 29% K minus walk, FIP's going to love you. Especially XFIP when it says like, hey, your only issue is home runs. So it's not too much of a surprise for Flaherty, and he will get dealt, I would think. Like,
unless
if I'm the Tigers,
stick around.
You gotta do it. Maybe
I think
stick
so
around,
too. But if they stick around, I think you push, but they should trade him. Honestly, I think you can make a
target right now, right? You would think.
You gotta be. Well, right? Depending on if Toronto's gonna trade like one of Vlad or Bichette.
No, but I mean, as a pitcher.
As a pitcher, yes.
Right? But you got to take advantage of that.
Well, unless the White Sox trade Crochet, which they should.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
But he's right there. Your point stands. I'm not trying to nitpick it, because your point stands that Flaherty is up there. And I think you can make a case that even if the Tigers are in the mix, they should still trade him and think big
100%.
picture. Because they could get a mint that could really help them for 25 and beyond, which I think is more important. So anyway, that's Jack Flaherty. Excited to see what happens with him. Even if he does get traded, I'll still be rooting for him. Like I said, favorite player of mine even before he was a Tiger. Let's keep moving on here. I got to bring up Ronel Blanco because he just keeps doing it. I went and watched him throw 6+ no-hit innings against my Tigers. The dude has near no-hit stuff every time out. What I did not realize, Nick, I learned this
pure
at this game.
Every What's so that? Often. Or pure no hit stuff every so often.
Correct. Yeah. Sometimes legit no hit. But I didn't know they stopped checking. Did you know that?
What do you mean?
Check the guys every inning anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know when that happened. Earlier this month, last month?
I don't know. It's one of those things of like they know that you will be checked, so you don't want to do it and try and risk
it. Like they've done enough checking to where it's now a threat, so you always have to be kind of concerned. But anyway, it's funny because I'm noticing it during Ronel Blanco throwing 7 no-hit innings against my Tigers, and I'm like, of anybody that needs to be checked, how about the guy who got caught earlier this year? But no, obviously I was being tongue-in-cheek with that. He was nasty. Ronel Blanco, like I said, though, the one thing he is difficult to square up. He's got an MLB best 5.1 hits per nine. What's he got going that's making this work for a 30-year-old out of nowhere? I can't call him a journeyman because he's only been with Houston, but he's got journeyman vibes. Do we believe in a summer surge from Ronel Blanco? Can he keep this going? And if so, at what level? Do you like the 406 FIP? Do you think he's more of a mid-3s ERA guy? Where's he at with this hip suppression? Because it's excellent for Ronel Blanco.
Yeah. So first and foremost, what was that with Edwin Diaz? What are you doing?
Dude. Well, his hands looked so nasty too. Yeah. I know that you can use some stuff and it is arbitrary and weird, but his hands looked disgusting. They looked like they were covered in stuff. Yeah. What was that?
What's going on?
It looked like the calloused hands of a 25 year construction worker.
Honestly, I thought it was the lubricant needed for the trumpets. that's what I thought it was.
Personally. He was just helping out Timmy Trumpets before,
you know,
but anyway, Ronel Blanco, again, did get in some trouble there, has maintained that it was just whatever concoction of rosin and sweat that he was using, has come back and hasn't missed a beat. So even if he was getting a little extra since coming back, Ronel Blanco has been every bit as good. So either he went right back to the cheating or the cheating was not making him who he was, which is what I tend to believe with Ronel Blanco.
Right. So the major thing I do want to express here is that this four-seamer has been really good against right-handers. Really low hard contact allowed. ICR is just 33% on that four seamer to right-handers. And the changeup with a 71% strike rate, just 18% ICR. This is against right-handers. So he's really done a number righty on righty. And honestly, it's shocking that the slider is the worst ICR pitch, 42%. Mm-hmm. So a little bit weird. You normally expect there to be more... more safety in that pitch. 21% swing strike rate though with it. So really against right-handers, this is looking good. Now a .08 BABIP for the four seamer against righties, probably not gonna stick.
Might not stick there.
Just throwing that out there. But I mean, I do have to mention BABIP isn't quite the correct one I should be using. It really should be Will Bacon, which is a .411. Because of home runs allowed.
Well, that's weighted on base average
it's more about on contact as opposed to like BABIP, which is just not including home runs. He's allowed, he's allowed 5 home runs on it. So you could argue that it's 12 hits, not 7 that he's had on the ball.
And so then the BABIP becomes a little bit misleading on Ronel Blanco's fastball is what you're saying. And be careful with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's still like a 150.
Yeah. Like, no, he's still good, but maybe just not stratospherically amazing. Yeah, not
0-8, but still.
So the 150. One of the trade-offs with this hit suppression is, of course, the walk rate. And those go hand in hand, right? His nastiness of not being in the zone and sometimes having walk issues. In fact, he had 3 walks in 1 inning against the Tigers. Of course, they did nothing with it. But, you know, that is part of it. Where is Ronel Blanco in terms of that possibly hurting him? Is it comfortable enough because he allows so few hits that a couple extra walks don't kill you? Where are we at on his control profile?
So I do think that Ronel Blanco does a really good job of playing that neckbeard approach a bit of saying, look, like my four seamer, I don't want it to get beat. And he does go up and out of the zone 60% of the time is high lock. But he does actually just say, I don't want you to hit my four seamer at times and just will have as a show pitch and then just rely on sliders and changeups. And I think that's why the slider is hit as much as it is with ICR, but damage doesn't really happen off of it. So that is really the game plan of Blanco. He has this changeup that he throws 31% of the time to lefties. That is really good. Low strike rate, 59%. But it's generally just been so effective for him, a 192 batting average allowed on that one so far. And I think those pitches all three of them are really tough out of the hand to figure out which one it's throwing. So I think all three make them better. That's really what's going on with Blanco. It's not as believable as I want it to be, unfortunately.
Okay.
I think he's gotten pretty lucky against left-handers. Again, the four-seamer, 40% usage, and a 164 batting average allowed. Everything is sub-200 batting average allowed against the lefties, and that just doesn't seem right. The ICRs on all three of these pitches are 40% or higher, 48% on the four-seamer to lefties. Jeez. So that really, to me, says, okay, the changeup has to do more. At 32% usage. The slider is a sub 10% swing strike rate, kind of expected, but 20% CSW, like what? This is all like, okay, Blanco, you're not going to get the same grace of Koufax above moving forward.
Does this
by
run...
the way, he's my official baseball guide. If you didn't know this, it's Koufax. Anytime I refer to someone, it's Koufax.
I'm good with that. But I like him as a model guide. Yeah.
The way I see this is that the last couple starts from Ronel Blanco have kind of been absurd. The CSWs that he's had the last three games have all hinted at a King Cole, which is the highest CSW of any pitcher on a given night. 38%, 42%, 37%. Giants, Tigers, and then the Orioles, which is just what? Swing strike rates have been 16% plus in each of those. Actually, four straight have been above 14%. It's hard for me to run away from him. And I do think that there's going to be some regression, obviously, for Ronel Blanco. But I don't think he's going to be, oh, no, we're done with Ronel Blanco. This is it. Haha, he's not that good anymore. No, the changeup is a very good pitch. The slider is obviously an effective one that he gets strikes with. And he's just not letting himself get beat on the four-seamer. He's okay making mistakes out of the zone on it instead of just giving in, which is why you have the walk rate as high as it is.
And one of the best things about Ronel Blanco, too, is because he keeps traffic pretty light outside of some walks, the walks have not stunted his innings. He's gone 6-plus in 9 of his 14 starts. He's gone 7-plus in 4 of them, which isn't a ton. But with somebody with this kind of walk issue, you might be concerned that it'd be a lot of 5-pluses and maybe a few 6s. But he's got the no-hitter, of course.
5.1 for 9 does that.
Yeah, and then 3 others of 7, exactly. So that really helps Ronel Blanco, and I'm with you where there's going to be regression, but it's not enough to move off of. Nothing actionable right now, even if he does have a bad start or two. He's way beyond Vargas for me. I need like 3 bad starts in a row to start assessing things.
No, I'm with you there.
Let's keep moving on here. Any innings concerns over the rest of the summer for the T5 group, specifically Jared Jones, Luis Gil, and maybe even Bobby Miller and Ryan Pepio. Miller, you know, got hurt. We know how the Dodgers like to protect. They're going to probably want him geared up, ready to go for October. But maybe the injury was the innings management that we needed, and he's good to go the rest of the way. Jones, of course, a rookie for the Pirates. Heal, they've said they're not going to put any restrictions. He's been amazing, but he had like 4 total innings the last 2 years combined. And Pepio's a Ray, so we have to ask about him. So where are you at on those 4? Let's start with Jared Jones. IP concerns for the summer with these guys.
I'm not someone that really leans into innings concerns. And I know that there is logic behind it. There is absolutely, it makes perfect sense saying, look, Nick, we know that these guys are young and there is going to be some conversation and it's anxiety. I don't want to deal with it. All of this, it makes all the sense in the world. And I'm so sorry. I know it's a fireside. I'm going to rant a little, Spore.
It's okay.
And I'll be honest, actually, you know what? I know everything I'm going to say. I'm actually going to give you an open floor to rant first because I know you have a lot of thoughts first.
Well, I'm just with you in terms of like, there's so much imprecision with the innings management stuff that I'm just not going to worry myself about it.
Yeah.
And in the case of all of these guys, except for Miller, with Jones and Heal specifically, and even Pepio to a degree, they didn't cost you enough that you have to super worry about it. Bobby Miller did. But at the same time, I think maybe the injury was enough time off that maybe the Dodgers can't necessarily restrict him either, because they're not overfilling with pitchers. Yamamoto just hit the IL. Bueller wasn't himself and now hit the IL.
Paxton's going to last for another 2 weeks.
Exactly. So they might not be able to. So Miller, I'm least concerned about. Let's put him off to the side.
Sure.
The other three, they've been found money. They have worked the way you've wanted. Pepio to a higher degree than Jones and Heal, but he was also pretty fairly priced, especially for a 12-teamer. I'm not going to get hung up on it because I don't want to sell out from something just thinking I have to get them off my team only to find out that it doesn't turn out the way I thought. And maybe they don't even restrict them, or the restriction is well planned to where they still get you to the finish line. The one spot where I will be a little bit more cautious is a head-to-head league, right? Because the numbers aren't just the numbers. In Roto, I don't care if I get the stats in August or April, But in head-to-head, of course, you need to be a little bit more mindful of it. So maybe a Jared Jones, I'm a little bit more aggressive with maybe trying to trade him, or Ryan Pepiot in head-to-head. But in Roto, I'm just letting it ride with these guys because we don't know. And with the lack of knowledge that we have, I don't want to make a false move on somebody that I super believed in and really loved. Like, that's where I was with Heal. So I'm not jumping out from under anything with him. And again, they've said that he's not going to have limits. I don't know if I believe them, but I'm riding the whole train with Luis Heal.
So by the way, with Ryan Pepiot, we're saying that he was the best of the three so far?
Thus far, what do you mean?
Best I mean, pitcher. You mentioned like Ryan Pepiot definitely, and then Heal.
Oh, no. The price. Sorry, I was talking about draft day price. He was actually, he had like a draft cost, whereas Jones and Heal were very cheap.
It is really surprising, actually. So, for example, I actually just picked up Ryan Pepiot. He was dropped in one of my 12 teamers, believe it or not. He was on waivers, and I had like the 11th waiver. I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to get him. He has a 4.61 ERA, which is why
I guess it's, it's because his ERA is up.
No, guys, come on. Ryan Pepiot's stuff is so, so good, and he's not real. I don't truly believe he's a terrible command guy.
I don't either.
I just don't. I think that it's a little bit weird at the moment, fine, but like, oh my gosh, he's so good. I'll put it this way, and I mean, there's so many ways to go after this. One, you're absolutely right. Roto, this isn't a conversation. Just not. Two, I do want to push back a little on the idea of what they cost. What they cost means nothing now. They are what they are right now. And it's more about what you expect moving forward or not. Doesn't matter if I spent $20, doesn't matter if I spent $1. They're on my team right now. That's, we just hope we get what we want to get, right? Whatever assessment we have, we should move forward with.
The only reason I don't fully agree with that, though, is because the cost does drive some of our decisions. We talked about those guys earlier, those higher tier guys that we pay the big premium for. We don't move on them because we paid that premium. We have an expectation. So it's a shorthand
player, not about the exact dollar value we spent. That's all I'm saying.
I'm saying it's like a shorthand for expectations of them, though.
I guess so. I mean, there are certain guys like, okay, a good example is Alek Manoah last year. Like he cost X amount, but we had to change our view and we did. Right.
Mm-hmm,
so like it can be it absolutely can be a shorthand. It's not always a universal case. So I will just say like, that's a sunk cost. And this is kind of just where we are now is where we are now. And that's whatever it is. Normally it is right. It's most of the time heavily. So it is the value that we had in the preseason. Mm-hmm. As a good shorthand. But anyway, when it comes to this innings conversation, I think so many people get so wrapped up into this with the assumption that we know how people are going to perform in September.
Exactly.
And it drives me up the wall.
I agree.
Because if you're in a head-to-head league, and again, Roto, push it aside, head-to-head league, first, you have to get there. You mm-hmm. have to actually get to the finals or the semifinals or whatever. Okay? Second, you don't know if Luis Heal is going to go on the IL for 2-3 weeks. And then all of a sudden he comes back. And then there he is. He's pitching in September. And they want to make sure he's ramped up for the playoffs and to be ready to go. You have no idea if that's going to happen. It's actually very atypical for any pitcher to go 32 starts straight in a season mm-hmm. these days. There's usually what we expect. If actually, remember last year, I put out the thing saying 15 of the top 31 pitchers in ADP made 26 or more starts last year. Okay. It's just not typical. So we might see some sort of gap in August. We're like, oh, you know, he's a little soreness or something. We wait for 3 weeks and he comes back. Right. That could very well be the case. And I think a lot of people are over assuming how your stud pitchers perform in September. Even the guys that don't get limited with their innings can still have a bad week in September, can still get limited for the playoffs and everything. So I care more about how are they right now? What do I expect them to be in the next month and change? Do I expect them to be struggling a lot? Do I expect them to develop more or not? And that is a much, much more important conversation than long-term.
Completely agree.
It's to me, I just throw it away. I will say this morning, talking about Luis Heal, someone was saying absolutely not. I would have in the 60s because of all these innings limitations. He's at 80 or so. I also very much feel that teams are changing how they view innings caps.
Because they've realized this hasn't worked, right?
Exactly. Like they've realized has not worked. And you have to breed people who have stamina. It's just it's something that I've outlined a lot. You have to push in order to, you know, weight train. You got to get there. You got to go for it. And how much that initial rep is heavily debated.
Isn't that part of why the Japanese and all Asian pitchers, KBO and JPL, pitch more? Because they are piling on the end. And I know some of the high school stuff is out of pocket. Yes.
Yeah,
100%. But the general principle of pitching more to build the guys up seems to work over there. And yet we're always trying to limit and slim down the innings.
My whole theory on this, and again, this is not, I'm sure there are a lot of people that are smarter than me and have, hey, look, this is how biomechanics work and everything like that. And Stephen Lyman, I'm just hearing his voice, pitching is attrition, it's amount of bullets, etc.
Mm-hmm.
What I have said, I think I've said on this one, is the solution to injuries, I think initially, is just you got to make it 6-man rotations. You just have to.
Yeah, that's your number one step.
5-man, really, honestly, just once a week. Make sure there's like 6 days rest.
And that's what they do overseas. Yeah.
Right? That makes all the sense to me. And that's the easiest way to do it. Everyone goes, oh man, but that means you're going to get like 28 starts or something like that instead of like, well, you want to do 28 starts for 12 years or you want to do 32 starts for 4? I don't know.
Exactly. Instead of the 8 we might get, let's try to get more guys consistently getting 28. Sure, I want to see guys pack on innings too. I like that. But like, I totally agree that a change has to be done. The stuff that we've been trying and been doing, it's not working. It's bad.
I mean, oh no, I don't get my Cole every so often. Guess what, guys? The massive IL list will have like studs among studs. So that means those guys enter the pool again.
Exactly.
That means we get more pitchers that we see if we have these larger rotations. I'm a fan of that. I want to see more exciting guys. And trust me, the quality of players is just getting better and better as we're seeing every single year as far as what the bar is. The average velocity was like 92, 93. Now we're up to like 94, 95 as the standard. Yep. Like, it's crazy what we can do. That's how I feel just overall about innings conversations. And so when it comes to Jared Jones, Luis Teal, and Ryan Pepiot, what's more important to me is what are they doing? I have some fear about Jared Jones because his vert on his four-seamer has dramatically dropped. We saw over 17 early on in the season, pretty much hovering around 16 to 17. Last three starts have all been underneath 15.
He simply hasn't been pitching as well lately.
And the four-seamer, what do you know? It's a sub 10% swing strike rate after doing an average of 20% for his first half of his starts. And that's just not the guy that we know. No. Even with that 8 strikeout game against the Dodgers, it doesn't matter. He actually just had a solid start as well, but it wasn't actually with that four-seamer dominating against the Rays here. We only saw 6 over 50 whiffs. That's a 12%. That's not the 22% overwhelming four-seamer that we've seen in the past. So there's a lot to be improved upon with Jared Jones. It could just keep getting worse. What I always say, though, guys are going to go through adversity in their rookie year at some point. We see it with everybody. Reese Olson did this. He went through the valley. And when they come out of it, that is when guys are at their peak. We saw it with Luis Gil. He got to his peak, essentially, after his initial troubles got there, and it sustained. And Orioles just jumped him, and it was ridiculous. And I don't care at all.
It happens. And we see that with hitters too. Hitters are the guys that are standing in the box against pitchers, Nick, the guy with the stick. So they deal with the same. He was taking a drink when I said that. So they deal with the same thing though. And I always want to see what their adjustment to the adjustment is. And so you talk about that with pitchers. I'm also not too worried about the heel thing. So then going off of innings, because you're not worried about that from a Jared Jones perspective, you do highlight some relative concerns about his pitching. Do you then shop him for that reason, perhaps, and maybe look to get out from under him? Or do you keep riding and hoping that he powers through Jared Jones?
I have a bad feeling that, it's not going to continue. Like it's really that IVB is bad. So I'm a little worried about it. I think the time to sell though has passed at this point,
because maybe he has one amazing start
that doesn't come with the skills improvement that we want, but the results are just so good. Then I might jump off of it, but it's not.
I think another solid outing here in Atlanta this week after the Tampa Bay start, because 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 Ks. And listen, we're not trying to dupe folks here. So I don't want to set it up like, hey, we want to get 2 good starts and then find some sucker to take him. No, we'll shop him and see where Jared Jones is at. But if it's another good start, if it's a good one in Atlanta coming off the Tampa Bay start, then you look at the Coors and you say, okay, well, that was a Coors outing. And Detroit clipped him. Who cares? But then if it is a good start, that would be four out of the last five that would look pretty decent for Jared Jones. And I think that would create a selling opportunity if you share some of Nick's concerns, which I am a bit nervous. Having watched these last couple of starts, even the good ones aren't as dominant as they were earlier in the year.
Sure. So we have to get to our games, but I'm going to give you an opportunity after this break to really just identify maybe one or two more as you look at this list that you think like, Nick, this is too high or this is too low. And we're going to do that after this break. All right, Spora, hit me. Who are the guys that you're like, these are the two that you're like, Nick, I think you're too low on this guy or you're too high on that guy. Go.
Okay, they both moved up this week, but they're both in tier eight. And I'm just curious if maybe the bookends of tier eight, Swervin, Jake Irvin and Hunter Brown, are maybe making a case to be even higher. They got +7 for Irvin, +4 for Brown. So you're on the right train with them. So this is not like a huge call out, but I've been really impressed with the moves that Brown has made, shifting to that sinker from the four seamer. And then just Jake Irvin in general and the Nats pitching in general, which we've keyed on all year when we were talking about Mackenzie Gore, your guy, Mitchell Parker, my guy. We've both had some love for Jake Irvin. Sorry, nothing for you, Patrick Corbin. But anyway, where are you at on those two? Because those two that stood out to me that I'm a little bit higher on that you'll see next week, where not egregiously, but like about almost 10 slots higher for both. They're right in the late 40s.
So Irvin and Brown. For me, it's awesome how good his curveball is right now. And the last start that I just saw from Irvin featured a legit Blake Snell blueprint. And it's like, what's going on?
So it's curving Jake Irvin then instead of Swerving.
Yeah, there it
Jake
is. The curve is really just everything. And I still am not sold that everything else is good enough is the biggest issue that I have with Jake Irvin. I'm actually going to talk about this, I think, on the craft with Spore, talking about guys who just won elite pitch.
I'm Spore.
With Spore, yeah, I'm going to talk about it with you right now. And
you said on the craft. Don't gaslight me.
You're welcome, Spore. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to talk about with Eno on the craft about one elite pitch tomorrow. And Irvin is that with his curveball, a 68% strike rate with only 30% ICR. And this guy's just throwing it in the zone and just getting all the strikes. And it's just no one can do anything with it. Mm-hmm. While the four seamer and the sinker and the cutter, I just don't quite like enough. They are getting strikes and they're surviving and they're allowing hits. It's just okay, cool. Curveball's fine. So as long as he's able to stay around the edges with those other fastballs, then he's okay. It does feel like it's a dam that's going to break is the only problem I have, which is why he is where he is. But it's a Vargas rule. And honestly, where I put him in the list here, I said before that around 72 is where I don't want to go after. Like all of those are just streamers for the week or whatever it is. Even tier 10 is kind of like that. Where it's just like, hey, these are the ones of the streamers that I would take a chance on right now, like Schwellenbach and Turnbull and Abbott and Tobias Myers and McGill. Are the ones like, okay, I can see this actually forming out of that streamer category. Like Mitchell Parker to me, unfortunately, is still just like, you don't really need to hold on to Mitchell Parker for the full season.
Yeah, we don't. And I like him too. And I want to be clear that like in 10s and 12s, I'm not saying bend over backwards. 15 teamer,
absolutely. 12 is a different thing, right? So 100%. My point is that tier 8 is still definitively above this. And then you look at the top 50, and the top 50 is stacked. Like it is kind of wild to me how good the top 50 is. Even in tier 7, like Hunter Green, Yusei Kikuchi, Taj Bradley, Nick Lodolo, Nick Pivetta, like those are the guys right above Jake Irvin. I can't put Jake Irvin above those because those are guys that I think can just be successful throughout the entire year. While I'm like, Jake Irvin, this is great, and you're not going to drop him. And also, I don't think it's going to last and be there by the end of August. So it's a little tough for me to do that. With Hunter Brown, I do love the fact that he's up to, 97 on his heater, up 1.56. It could be the Texas heat, as I called it. Obviously, he's not in Texas for that game, but it's, Houston. I don't love his command. The sinker is obviously helping, but really the biggest worry I have with Hunter Brown is like, are you able to actually spot your breaking balls correctly? And be able to locate fastballs correctly. He goes back and forth a little. It's also been a really nice run against some pretty mediocre opponents. He's gone the Angels, the Mariners, I think the Twins without Royce Lewis, the Angels, the Tigers, and the White Sox in his last six games. It's the Mariners, the Tigers, the Brewers, and that was the bad game.
Then the Brewers
and then the Angels,
one.
The Mariners, the Twins without Royce, Angels, Tigers, White Sox. Like, he's gotten as much of a gift as you can hope for there.
That's really fair to point out for Hunter Brown. Now, he has made the pitch change, going from four-seamer to sinker, added velo, pitching better, but you cannot ignore how plush that schedule is. The Brewers are the only team with any semblance of concern, and what did they do? They actually hit him a bit.
Yeah, four runs, 5 innings, 3 walks, yeah, 5 Ks.
And 2 bombs. Yeah. So yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I do like him. I have him a little bit higher, but I will not push back on that point about the schedule, because
I understand, like, okay, versus like Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller hasn't developed the secondaries yet, but man, it feels so close. Like, he's right there. Like, obviously Brian Wu is going to be removed from this. So there you go. Hunter Brown, you're at 56. Oh, Yu Darvish. Okay, go 55 already. Reese Olson, I would think you'd
want. Wait, did Brian Wu get hurt again?
Oh yeah, yesterday, right hamstring tightness.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, sorry. I know. He was throwing 97 Spore.
I know.
And then 3 innings. So he's like, good. Oh man, he's okay. He's healthy. He's good. Oh, cool.
That's frustrating.
Would you have Reese Olson above Hunter Brown?
I think I do right now. Yes.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out who you have below Hunter Brown then. Nestor Cortez?
Let me look.
Right? It's
Hodge
Bradley maybe? Nestor Cortez.
I have Nestor Cortez.
I cannot figure out where to rank. I really have no idea.
Yep. Actually, okay, so this is interesting, because I put a little note. I hadn't made the change yet, but I keep like little notes. Move Brown up like 7 spots. Yeah. Right now, before the move, he's at 57, the exact rank you have him.
Sport, come on, buddy.
That's crazy. Now, I did, the note says plus 7. I was going to move him up 7 spots, but I might just leave him here because we both have him 57 now.
It's going to be 55, just so we're fair.
Well, because I have to move Wu, who I did not have.
Okay, so then there's like Max Scherzer. Like, I don't know where to rank Max Scherzer.
I don't either. And I have him similar to where you've got him. You got him in the tier right above, right?
I have the tier above is the cherry bomb tier. And then you have the Hollies or the stable ones like Rodon and Valdez and Scherzer and Eovaldi.
Like, I've got concerns about Scherzer, but he's a set it and forget it guy. Yeah, I'm starting him off rip. Like, he's already in and he's not moving until, you know, he'd have to have like 5 bad starts in a row for me. I love Scherzer. So that's fair. I think push come to shove, as I challenge you, I get challenged back on Brown, and I'm like, you know what? I think you got a pretty good spot here.
Sweet. So one more question. And you see the tier 11 and tier 12. These are really like the Nick 12 teamers. Like I'm saying, there's not a guy here that I'm holding on. 12 teamer, not 15. I understand 15, there are more stable ones you have to do.
Definitely.
We're really like not favorable for after the next 2 weeks, essentially. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, top of tier 11 is like, these are the good streams this week. So like Canning and Paxton are there. Brady Singer against the Marlins, etc. Is there someone inside of these two that you're like, Nick, you're going to be moving these guys way up in future weeks, and these really should be considered more than just a streamer right now in a 12 teamer? I don't feel that way. I'm curious if you do.
I don't have heavy leans. Like, there was no one that jumped out that I said, oh my goodness, this guy right here. My love for Brandon Pfaadt means I have to mention him, but I'm mentioning him off of a 4-walk, 0-K game. So I'm not on the most solid footing there. I grant that, but I do really like him. And I think he could at least be in that tier 11 because he is in tier 12 right now, but that's
split. Well, he doesn't have a good favorable start this week, I don't think.
He gets a two-step, Minnesota and Oakland, both
No,
at
he
home.
Just gets the twin. Oh, he does get the Oakland at the end. I was looking at Minnesota. I'm like, I don't want to start him against Minnesota.
No, Minnesota's a little bit nerve-wracking for sure because they can go
bridge.
But
a good point about
you.
Oakland, I probably should have raised them for that start specifically.
But then beyond that, you know, I've never really fully fallen for Brady Singer. Like, he can get on runs where you're going to rank him higher, but push come to shove,
Same guy he's been for 3 years.
Exactly. Even the big breakout year was not a breakout. It was the max of what his skills can do. I know I've said that a million times. Maybe Jordan Montgomery if he finds it, but he is so lost right now that I'm not going to push back too hard. No, I really think you've got good groups here that belong in this kind of disposability tier in 10s and 12s where you got to be ready to cut bait. Even somebody like Jordan Hicks, who was toting a sub-3 ERA for quite a while, he might even still have one. I totally agree with you.
Or 128 whip, 20% K rate right now.
I totally agree with you having him down here. I've got him down in the 70s as well. So no, I really don't. I think you got some good guys here that I'm interested in, that I keep tabs on, but none that I would push back. Like, I want John Gray to be there, but I can't argue that. I'm not an idiot. I mean, I am, but for different reasons. So, but then other than that would be the two D-backs, Pfaadt and Montgomery, that I keep tabs on.
So across the last 10 games, how many times do you think Jordan Hicks went at least 6 innings?
4.
0.
Oh my goodness, you trivial pursuited me.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy. Zero. And he had one on the 27th and then 10th and the 5th. This is all April. He had three in April and that's it.
And like, I don't want to do some like big victory lap on it. First off, the season's not over. He could be fine. But I never felt comfortable with this throughout the entire early run of greatness from Jordan Hicks. Even when he took a 270 ERA into June, it just always felt wobbly. Did it not?
Well, okay, so with Jordan Hicks, at the very least, like, I think both of us, say at least for 12 teamers, like, cool, like, one of your last round picks, take a flyer on this, see how this works.
For sure.
And like, burn and churn. And honestly, if you did that, you got value out of him. And then if you
absolutely
moved on, then great. So the thing about Hicks is that you throw sinkers that are really hard to hit. These are really good sinkers. However, sometimes he doesn't throw enough of them in the zone. And then the splitter and the sweeper are just not consistent enough as strike pitches. Just about 55% strike rate on both the splitter and the sweeper. There are games he has one of them working, and then the sinker gets even better. But it's just too inconsistent between them. Those two pitches, when they are strikes, are great. Super low ICRs on both of them. It's just, hey, are you going to get these in the zone enough? And probably not. Sub 5% zone rates for both the splitter and the sweeper, and that's a problem. So that's really the issue. And he was sick with the flu like twice.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's something more, I don't know, larger that's affecting him, because he really hasn't been locked in for a good number of starts now. And
no, he really hasn't.
It's not enough. 20% strikeout rate with a 128 whip. Right now, I just felt, you know what? You really don't need to hold on to this. I consider him like a Toby, but it's just not worth it.
And that's where I've been with Jordan Hicks all year, because if you're not getting that good ERA, what are you getting? And the answer is not really anything, because you can't get too comfortable thinking about wins with San Francisco. The K's aren't there, like you said, and the whip is dangerous. So yeah, he's very, very scary, but I like how you've tiered out these last two tiers here. A lot of interesting guys. A couple of them might play in the summer, but we don't know who yet. Cade Povich could be a guy for a bit, but I'm not going to make a shot.
I've got one more guy for you here.
Go ahead.
And I'm actually doing him a solid, because the game before this, he allowed 8 earned runs, and I'm not even going to include that one. Okay. So this guy's last 8 games, he has a 2-3 record. About 50 innings, 3.99 ERA, 1.15 WHIP, 15% K rate, 4% walk rate. Do you have any idea who this could be?
Simeon Woods Richardson?
No, he was traded by that team to this current team.
Ooh. No, I'm failing. Kyle Gibson? No, he wasn't traded.
No. Simeon Woods Richardson was traded by the Jays.
Was traded by the Jays. I was thinking of the, of the Twins. So traded by the Jays. No, I'm failing. Just give
Jose Berríos.
The great undulator, our guy. Oh my God, we've had beef on him forever. I've always loved him, man. You've always been more realistic about him.
One game of 6 strikeouts in those 8, and everything else is 5 or under.
Home runs galore lately, right?
It's pain. And before this, what's so funny to me is that, like, before that 8-run game, I could have included that and it would have been like, oh my gosh, ridiculous stats and whatever, fine. But this to start the year for Jose Berríos is a little different. Before the 8-run game, everyone's like, oh,
a little different.
I mean, a little. 7 games, he had a 1.44 ERA, 101 WHIP with an 18%.
I know. But by the way, I will say our debates on Berríos, are why I didn't really react to that in April.
Right, yeah.
I was like, okay, that's great. I love him, but I know who he is. He's gonna work his way back up to a mid-3s ERA, and he's at 3.43 right now.
That's so funny. And like, great undulator. Actually, I think it was 2021, first pitch Arizona. I asked Eno to come into the On the Corner podcast live pod, and all I said to him was like, I just want you to heckle. Can you just heckle? And what he did, maybe it was 2022, but he said, Jose Berríos is not a Toby. I'm like, yes, he is.
I still don't agree. I agree with Eno. He's not a Toby.
It's he's a 70% right now.
No, I know. Right now he is. In those previous years, I don't know so much.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean,
22 was a nightmare, obviously. But anyway, we don't need to rehash that. You're right. Right now, though.
We're going so
right
long.
Right now he is. Let's hit a break and then play some games.
Yeah, let's absolutely do that. And we're going to go over all of our games after this break.
All right, so it's time for our games check-in. Now, obviously, we missed a week, so we're in arrears a little bit. So we're checking back in on the games from week 11. So let's go ahead, or excuse me, from week 12. This is week 14 right now, so we missed 13. I had a pretty big week, Nick. You got a little bit burnt.
I got my streamer. Art Getty had to throw when Verlander got hurt.
Day early, and he really took it on the chin with a minus 12. Meanwhile, Dane Dunning gave me an 18-pointer against Seattle, which was really nice. And again, these are our streamers, 20% or lower at Fantasy Pros, and they need at least 10 points. So I get plus one there. Sit of the week, 50%+, 10 or fewer points. Walker Buehler, bang, nailed it there against Texas. He's at 75%. Obviously, that's going down with him going on the IL. I had Cutter Crawford, 65% against the Yankees. I'm fading the Yankees. I feel comfortable about that. But no, he comes through, which, hey, I ended up having to start him in two leagues, so I felt okay about missing that one. But nice. You get the dub there. Star of the week. That's 50% or under at Fantasy Pros. They have to score at least 15 points. My Eric Fetty at 49% at Arizona, boom, cashes in a dub. Your J.P. Sears at Minnesota does not, though. And then
he had two starts against them, and I was kind of thinking, like, oh, man, maybe on the second one he'll be better, and then actually just both of them are bad. Just both of them are terrible.
And I like Sears. They've had a few guys that have teased and tantalized this year, but in the end, Oakland's still pretty rough. Yep. And then our one game matchup, one of our studliest matchups of the year, Corbin Burns versus Zach Wheeler. I take the dub on that one.
The one time Zach Wheeler allows 8 earned runs.
Whoops. This is crazy, though, by the way, because this is the second time that we've done a marquee matchup. The first time, one of the guys didn't pitch. And then, oh, no, this third time, because then Scooble pitched terribly. I thought we had one where a guy didn't pitch, too. But then this one, you just catch the raw end with Wheeler's worst start of the year out of nowhere. So that was a bummer. Yeah. So it goes. So I score 3, you get 1. Add it all up. It is now 22-19. I have an edge updated through week 13 now.
Yes.
Let's get into this week.
Oh, man, guys. Hey, root for me, okay? I need to come back here. Got to make this.
You got a streamer I love. So I think you're pulling a point with this one. Let's start with our streamer.
Yes. So when it comes to streamers, I'm going with Griffin Canning. He just looked really good against against Oakland last night. His changeup is looking fantastic. He avoids the mistake pitches with his four-seamer. He gets your Tigers. That should be a pretty solid one. That's a 10% roster. Feel good about that one.
Love that. I'm going to go with Hogan Harris, a guy that we've talked about in recent weeks here. I think maybe even in the streamer category at some point. 7% at Arizona, just like what he's doing. I mentioned some of these Oakland starters have teased and tantalized. He's been one of them. He's been putting up some pretty good numbers this year. And while you can't have high win expectancy anytime you're using an Oakland A's pitcher, you do love the 272 ERA. It's a 113 whip, which is a little bit higher than a ERA that low would normally generate. So I would project him as more of a mid-3s ERA guy, but I like Hogan Harris against the Diamondbacks that are decent, but not super scary. What about your sit? Somebody over at 50%, over 50%.
Yeah.
You're saying I'm not going to start him.
Javier Assad. 0 strikeouts last time out against the Mets. This is against the Brewers. The Brewers are a solid offense.
They terrify me.
Assad is one of those guys that we feel like was destined to fall off a bit. He's so command focused. He's not really a stud arm in my view. And it's been a Vargas rule. He had got a lot of strikeouts before him, but I just feel like this is the beginning of the end for Assad.
Totally agree. I think you really want to avoid Milwaukee a lot. I don't think that they get as much run as they should as a team to fade. They are 5th in WOBA against righties. They're actually tied with Baltimore at 331. The Dodgers are at 332. Padres are at 334. And then the Yankees are in the stratosphere at 341. But basically, the Padres, Dodgers, Baltimore, and Milwaukee are all very close there in the low 330s. Be careful with pitchers against those Brewers. I'm going easy again. I'm trying to fade the Yankees. Again, yours you would probably really sit. We talk about how in the sits of the week, we're not usually really sitting these guys. It's more of like a be careful. Don't use them in DFS. Or if you have a deep enough rotation, maybe you do sit them. Mm-hmm. Mine falls under that category. It's Kevin Gausman. I know you're probably not sitting him, but I don't have any confidence in him as a frontliner right now to where I might actually pick some spots. And if I were going to pick some spots, this would be one where I would sit Kevin Gausman against the Yankees, because fading the Yankees to me is just not a bad move right now outside of the Uber aces. Is there any world where you'd sit Gausman this week?
I mean, I could see that. Yeah. He's he's not earned as many whiffs on his splitter this year. And it's really terrifying, honestly.
Yeah,
that splitter is what the nullifier is for his four-seamer. It's supposed to be reversed. The four-seamer sets up that splitter, and if the splitter's not doing its thing, then uh-oh, that's a problem. So, yeah, that could be pretty scary.
Yeah, so that just gives me a lot of pause with Kevin Gausman, and I just haven't been there all year. Star of the week, 50% or lower at Fantasy Pros. They got to cash in at least 15 points. You mentioned him earlier. Talk to us about Reese Olson at the Angels.
You know, yours too easy. Too easy. I don't know how he's 45% rostered.
I'm taking advantage here. I'm trying to protect
unreal.
The lead.
You're really trying to go for the jugular. I'm like, all right, let me get some fun. No, I'm just joking. Reese Olson against the Angels should be a solid one. I mean, his slider is back in action. He's not letting his four-seamer get a beat, essentially. He's not just throwing those four-seamers in, those sinkers in. He's going, no, slider first. And he also still has a really great changeup. I think this should be an easy slam dunk play against the Angels.
Totally agree. Never was really terribly concerned with Reese Olson during the struggles. One of them was against Milwaukee, which was a revenge game for the Brewers. Don't forget, that's where the Tigers got him from. But I really wasn't concerned. Even when the Nats hit him up again the following start in Boston, before that was a three-start low. He now has 12 and a third, two earned runs at Atlanta and against the White Sox in his last two. I like Reese Olson to stay hot here against the Angels in LA. I am going for a bit of an easy one. A guy we talked about earlier, Jake Irvin, only 45% though. So if the market's going to give it to me, I'm going to take what I feel like is, you know, a nice little bit of a gimme here. It's never really a gimme when you're streaming, and the Rays can sneak up and get you. But this year, they really have not been terribly worrisome to start pitchers against. They are 26th in WOBA against righties this year with just a 297 mark. That's in the territory with Oakland, Miami, Pittsburgh, and the White Sox. Yeah. Those are the only teams that they're above. So I like Jake Irvin against the Rays.
You realize if he doesn't do well, this is going to be a cycle Irvin. Okay. There you go. We have a one game matchup. And what we have hinted at is the one we chose maybe might not happen. So we do have a backup just in case. And the one here, this is a really fun one. It's Renato Lopez, as we've mentioned, but he doesn't get two steps. So who knows? And Paul Skeens. Which one are you going with?
I'm going to go ahead and go with Raylo here. This is definitely one of those ones where I could have gone either way. Love a fellow Paul S. A mustachioed Paul S. Yeah. at that. But I'm a Raylo guy through and through. Always have been. So I feel like it's right for me to take on the lesser pitcher, but the better team. And you've got the better pitcher in the worst team context with Skeens. I just hope they both dominate. This is another potential marquee one. I want to see them both go at least six. Maybe get some double-digit strikeouts from both. I don't know. Because neither offense is hitting very well. Believe it or not, Atlanta's offense has actually not been that good. And it was pre-Acuna. Better? What's that?
It's been better the last week or so.
It has. It has been improving. But on the whole, it's been less threatening than you would think, even when they had Acuna. They are only 14th in WOBA against righties. But I'm excited for that. But we do have a backup because Reynaldo Lopez has been on the docket for about 512 two starts this week.
Absolutely.
Or this season.
And also, by the way, Paul Skeens is just dope and makes us feel dope. So, oh no, I need a roof for Paul Skeens.
Bummer. Woe is me. Twist
my arm. Woe is me. That's a big Black Creek Wedding reference, and it's the best one. Michael King and Tanner Houck is our backup game because we recognize I want to do this a little bit more with you because we've missed two of these already, and I don't want that to happen again.
Correct.
So, Michael King, Tanner Houck, I personally think that Houck is an ace is going to ace. He gets the label. King is not there yet. And I would say that it's a tougher matchup for King because you don't have Tatis in there with the Padres, but Michael King is underloved. He's underappreciated.
Totally agree.
As of yesterday, believe this or not, fifth in the majors in total strikeouts.
That's nutty.
You did not realize that, did you, listener, unless you saw my tweet? Yeah, that's crazy. Sure, he got an extra five because of the Korea series. Okay. So then he's ninth or something like that. But across 16 starts, in those 16 starts, that's more than Castillo. That's more than Corbin Burns. That's more than Pablo Lopez. Kind of wild.
It's fantastic.
So I see Michael King as a command guy. He had a really unfortunate second frame in his last start that should not continue moving forward. And the Red Sox are not really that terrifying. So I'm going to go with Michael King here.
I like it. This is another one where I definitely could have gone either way. I never quit King this year. Just wanted to keep collecting shares where I could, where he was getting cut. And I understand why. Like, I get it. If you didn't believe in him coming into the year and you took a shot because you listened to one of us or just read it in a magazine somewhere, you're like, okay, I'll take a shot, but he's not my guy. And then you jumped off in late April. Sure. But I couldn't do it. I liked King. That said, I'm on the opposite end here because I like Tanner Houck and what he's been doing. I think this is a pretty even matchup here in terms of the pitching talent. I'm going to need a little bit of luck because I do think you've got the lineup edge just ever so slightly. But Houck's been amazing this year. You talk about him being an ace is going to ace, a guy that you just blindly trust right now. We do not need to check in after every little potentially bad start, which he hasn't really had. What, one this year? Didn't he get beat up by the Angels?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, the Angels of all teams knocked him around a little bit. But beyond that, he hasn't had a bad start. But even when he does have the inevitable bad start or two, we're not going to make any moves off of that. Tanner Houck is locked in the lineup right now. So I'm excited to see what he can do if we have to go to that matchup.
Absolutely. Well, Spore, I think that's going to conclude this episode. And thanks, everybody, listening on the... I'm going to stop for a second. I was actually thinking about this, Spore. Well, my help, both of us here, is to put this one also on Sleeper in the Bust. And as like a preview and showcase of this thing is there, I'll record a small thing at the very end of this that is like a opening to it. Like, or actually, you probably should do it. Just saying, like, hey, guys, this one's a preview episode. Go find our direct link for the episode. But this is... that thing, you know what I mean?
Sure, I would love to do that. Yeah,
right. Because I figure, like, why not? We should be, you know, we should be
100%.
Yeah, right. So I'll conclude by like, thanks for listening, all this stuff. And if you're listening to them, okay. All right, yeah, I think that's going to. all right, Spore, look at that. The wood has been dispersed into the air, back to the universe's particles, as our day has come to an end in front of the fire. Our hands are warm. Our robes have kept us even warmer. Our slippers look delicious. I don't know why delicious. I'm so sorry. I'm going to stop doing this. Thanks for joining us today, guys. And if you ever listening on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, remember, this is just a preview episode to get all of our future ones that come out every Tuesday, or actually every Wednesday. Make sure you subscribe to the direct feed, the Fireside Chat inside of wherever you listen to podcasts on Spotify, Apple. We're also going to be on YouTube soon enough. We actually did this one with a new lovely video presentation or something. So definitely look forward to those. We're going to do those live on YouTube. Spore, what you got going on this week?
Finishing up the rankings, going to get them posted up late this week, early next. I think they'll be late this week. So if you're listening to this on the 26th or later in that week, they'll be up. SP chart every day, going over all the pitchers, podcasts with Justin, and of course, working on Out of the Park Baseball stuff as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. I, of course, will be doing all my stuff at PitcherList. And everybody listening right now, I'll be actually in Philadelphia this Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern time at the Xfinity Lounge before the Phillies and Marlins game on Friday, June 28th. So if you're in town and you want to hang out, come on by. You'll meet some of the people with PitcherList, and Alan Adair will be there as well. It's going to be a fun time. So come on by Xfinity Lounge in Philadelphia, 5 p.m. Eastern time. This Friday. But that is it. Thank you all who are listening on Sleeper in the Bus. Make sure to subscribe to the direct feed. But on the behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock, and thank you for joining us by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.